Hello and welcome to the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. My name is Craig Hansen, and today I'm joined by Alan Dodson, a Villarreal obsessive based in California. Alan spent 10 years managing Villarreal USA, a fan community which is part of the SB Nation family, and continues to write for the site today. He's been following the Yellow Submarine for many years through thick and thin, and I can't wait to hear how this most unique of love affairs came about today on the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. Don't forget, if you enjoy the show, we urge you to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This is extremely important to us. We thank you so much in advance for helping our little podcast to grow. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Well, pretty good. It's kind of a strange morning here. I'm in California, and I was awakened at about 5 a.m. with all of our Villarreal USA people chatting about the latest Emery rumors, so it's kind of a busy day.
Yep, it is. It's an interesting day. That's definitely something we're going to have to come on to in a little while. But before we do that, I'd like to say thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm really excited to speak to you today, because from what I've read, you have quite an intriguing story. And that's where I'd like to touch on first. So first of all, if you wouldn't mind explaining to myself and the listeners, not only how you first became a football fan, because I know that that in itself isn't the most common thing in the US. I know that there's a lot of other sports that sort of take precedent over football. But then how did that blossom into becoming a Villarreal fan, which should be even less common in the United States?
Right. Well, the two are actually fairly closely related. So growing up, I don't know, I think my parents gave me a shortwave radio back, I don't know, maybe like for my 10th, 12th birthday or something. And one of the things that I could pick up was the BBC World Service, which was going strong at that time. And that's really what got me started on football, soccer here. So I really enjoyed that. I think as a kid here, I wasn't very good at the traditional sports. So I rather liked being able to follow something that I at least felt I could play, even though I didn't really get a chance to much. I thought it would be more fun to follow if I chose a team. And so Liverpool at the time were the team that I chose. And, of course, Everton were then their rivals, and Arsenal were their big rivals at the time as well. I also decided to support Port Vale as a small club, which I continue to do to this day.
That is fascinating. Yeah, Port Vale, is not too far away from where I'm based, actually. I'm from a place called Warsaw in the Black Country. So we're sort of in their League 2, League 1 sort of realm. Yeah. I guess they're kind of like our local rivals.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Port Vale. What attracted you to Port Vale?
I think because I was reading Arnold Bennett novels at the time, and they make an appearance in there. So a few of them. So that was actually how, and actually one of my friends was saying, you know, if you really want to understand football in the UK, you should support a small club. You know, don't, the real stories are down at the lower levels. And so that was pretty much true. And so at the time, this was like early 80s, Port Vale were kind of a interesting project because they kept going, they yo-yoed around, but then they got better and they had some pretty good players there for a while. So it was a good team to support. But the Villarreal connection really didn't happen until, like for most of us, they got into Europe. And remember I said that Everton and Arsenal were the two clubs that I sort of didn't like because I liked Liverpool, right?
Sure.
And so, of course, in 2005, Villarreal eliminate Everton in the playoff round of the Champions League. And then they go all the way to the semis and lose to Arsenal. It so happened that I didn't really get to see many of those matches, but I did sort of follow along, and I was like, they were sort of intriguing. They had Diego Forlan, who I sort of knew of, and so I started following them not really closely until 2008, when the Euros happened, and Marcos Senna was one of the stars of the Spanish side, and at that point, I thought he was tremendous and started following the team more closely. And then in 2010, I became involved with Villarreal USA and becoming a manager of that. And so that really then made it even more. Then I could follow matches more and comment on them. And again, at the time, we had a really intriguing side, went to the semis of the Europa League. Of course, then the next year, we were relegated. And so it's been a roller coaster since then in many ways.
It sure has. And when you first started getting more seriously interested in the days of Marcos Senna and that Euro 2008 time, who was in charge at the time then in terms of head coach?
We had Pellegrini was head. He left, let's see, Ernesto Valverde came in 2009. I think Pellegrini got hired away by Real Madrid that summer, and Valverde came in and didn't last very long. And then he was replaced by Garrido, who was the B team coach at the time and had done really well. And then Garrido was in charge, I guess, pretty much half of the 2009-2010 season, and then up until the middle of the 2011-12.
So how well remembered is Pellegrini? Because I know that he was actually there for a sort of prolonged run, like 4 or 5 seasons. How well a job did he do, and how well remembered is he by fans?
He's very well remembered by fans. I think I think enough time has elapsed now that you don't hear his name bandied about as coming back to Villarreal. When Garrido was fired in the middle of 2012, you heard his name some. When Marcelino left in, what was that, 2017, I guess you still heard his name a little bit. He's fondly remembered, but I think as time passes, I mean, I think that squad, in many ways, he did a tremendous job building a team in an era where, you know, Senor Raj always joked that they had a lot of South Americans on the team, and he was asked why, and he said, because they're cheap. And they're not cheap anymore. You know, I mean, it was possible in those days to build a team with less money. The scouting, Villarreal spent a lot of money on scouting in South America that worked out very well. Well, now everybody scouts there. So I think, in some ways, Pellegrini, he's always going to be fondly remembered. But I don't think people think more than that necessarily, because with us winning the Europa League last year, I mean, that was the first major trophy we've ever won. And, you know, Pellegrini got close, but it was a long time ago now in a lot of fans' minds, I think.
And what kept you coming back to Villarreal? Because you had that fascination in the beginning with Senna, and I understand that Pellegrini had built a pretty good team during that time, and because of the rivalries that the matchups they'd had in Europe with teams that you didn't really like, how did that sort of translate into what kept you coming back over and over again? Was there something about the club itself, the identity of the club, that made it attractive?
Yeah, I think so. I think I grew up in a town in Tennessee that was about the size of Villarreal, actually. And so I think the when I read about the club, and in those days it was mostly reading because there wasn't, you know, you didn't get all the video things that you do now. I think what impressed me was that sense of building a club that was in this small town that at the same time wasn't completely there. You know, there have been teams that people have tried to put together that have just fallen apart because the local populace never really got behind them and supported them. And in the case of Villarreal, I think that's really, it is a local team, and everybody, I mean, if you're in the town, I mean, as somebody told me, he said, this is the best place in the world to live if you love football, because that's what the whole town is about. I mean, with all and all the youth pitches and everything else, it's not just about the first team, and it's about building the entire framework for kids to play growing up in Villarreal and surrounding areas. So I think that's really cool.
I can see why that would be very attractive as sort of an antidote to the usual kind of Real Madrid, Barcelona, and these other kind of mega global clubs to root for an actual local team, as you put it. And I understand that you actually had the opportunity to go to the area, right? And to go to the stadium. How was that? Tell us about that. Did you get that sort of homegrown feel when you were there? Did you feel like it was everything you hoped for?
Yeah, pretty much. Apart from the fact that the weather was terrible.
You didn't expect that. No.
Expect that. There were more things I had hoped to do around town that we weren't able to do because it was pouring the entire week pretty much. But yes, I mean, I think the fact that my wife and I were actually staying in Valencia, and we took the train up to Villarreal. You know, you get off at the train station and you just see, I mean, people walking, you know where the stadium is, it's where everybody's going toward. And it was very much like, it reminded me of the growing up as a kid and going to the American football high school games at home, and it was just the thing that everybody did. And I guess the thing that's a little hard for some people to understand is that in Villarreal, it's still being in the Primera is still kind of this thing that's the main thing. And so the match I saw, we played Sevilla. In fact, Unai Emery was coaching Sevilla at the time, as I recall. And we, first half, we sort of played them off the pitch, except we didn't score any goals. Second half, they got an early goal, and then a late one, we lost 2-0. And afterwards, everybody was like, oh, well, you know, I mean, it's not like yes, I'm sure people live or die with the results of the club, but it's more of an overall, we support you and we don't, it's, you don't find tons of Villarreal fans screaming about how as soon as we lose a match, we should change all the players and everything. It's more relaxed than that. And I personally like that. I know there are people that feel like, you know, the role of fans is to be more belligerent or something, but I kind of like it being a little more balanced.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, it sounds like a sort of wholesome, really, life-affirming experience to be there in that stadium and watch that team. And I'm not really one either for the kind of, you know, petulant nature of fans nowadays, especially online. But we're going to come on to that in a little bit, because I wanted to ask you a little bit about the online fan presence. But as far as the visit to the stadium, how did you find the stadium? So I understand that by the standards of, you know, whether the town is small or not, it's a big club. Like you said, they just won the Europa League. They've been in Champions League later stages. You know, they've finished in the top six loads of times in the Spanish League. So they are a big club. But I understand the stadium's quite small and quite old.
Well,
from what I could understand.
Yeah, it's small in the sense that it holds, you know, every place you look at tells you a different capacity, but roughly 25,000 people, which is by football standards in the UK, for example, certainly, you know, an EPL team with that stadium would be very small. And actually, since I've been there, because I was there 5 or 6 years ago, they've actually done a lot of work around the ground. It was very hemmed in by other buildings, and the club has actually bought some buildings to, and there was a place that was, I think it was like indoor swimming pool that was a municipal thing that was bought and demolished. But the ground I would say it reminds me more of of a ground, like in a, it's not, it doesn't feel really old. It has been modernized and everything and kept pretty much up to date, but it is small and the fans are right on the pitch. It's built up rather than back. So when you're watching a match, you're very close to the action.
That's what you want, though, right? Great atmosphere, too.
Yeah, it is. The Villarreal fans have a bit of a reputation for being kind of quiet. They're not a lot of the fans are older people from the town, from the surrounding areas, who have supported the team for years, and they're kind of. You see them before the matches sitting in their seats, chewing their sunflower seeds or whatnot. And just, it's not, there's not the sort of organized, cheering and chanting that there is in a lot of UK grounds or a lot of American, MLS grounds. I think Senior Raj was very concerned, I would say that he's kind of kept a bit of a thumb on organized support in the stadium because he wants to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. It's kind of the impression I get. There are a lot of little a lot of groups in the surrounding countryside that support the team too. And I know the match we were there was a group that was right below us banging drums and singing and everything. It was very nice. But that was a small part of the ground that was doing it as opposed to an entire stadium.
And what was the away support like? Because I understand that you actually managed to see them at Anfield, right?
Yeah. That was a lot of fun, although the result wasn't. But yeah, away, everybody was, it was a great feeling. I mean, it's, being in the UK, it's like, there's something about supporting your team away that is the really special thing, right?
It's much more like intense atmosphere. I think it's because that's where you get the most hardcore, dedicated fans, isn't it? It takes a lot more effort to go away.
Yeah, exactly, because it's like you can go to your home ground pretty much. You know, if you live there and have a season ticket, that's what you do. But it's away support that really those are the things you really remember. And I think at Anfield, it was terrific. It was just that was the match after I'm going to get the details wrong, but there had been the whole inquest of the Hillsborough thing, and there had been a resolution that week that basically said, yeah, you know, this was not what it was reported at the time, and there was some vindication for the people that passed away and their families. And so when we were at the ground at the beginning singing the Villarreal anthem, it was terrific. And for about 15 seconds, you know, you've had these several thousand Villarreal fans all holding our banners and singing and chanting and everything. And we're like, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And then Anfield and the Kop erupted. I mean, it's always emotional there, I'm sure. But it was especially emotional with that. And I think that was kind of, wow, I will never forget that. That was worth the trip, just the chills as before the match started with all the singing and everything.
Yeah, you can feel those through the TV every time they do You'll Never Walk Alone, no matter who you support, unless it's one of their great rivals, I guess. How did the Villarreal fans react to that? You know, when you saw them all singing You'll Never Walk Alone, did you get the feeling that the Spanish fans understood at least sort of how emotional that was, and did they sort of find it a cool thing to experience too?
Yes, they did. In fact, there were some activities in the afternoon that were set up. There's a Celtic Submarine, which is like a big, it's a supporters group that's based in Villarreal, and they also support Celtic in Scotland. And it's,
wow, that's fascinating. Yeah. Why is that? Is there some kind of old connection between?
Well, I think it dates back to when they came and played in Villarreal in the, I want to say 2008. It was in the Champions League. The deal was that, you know, talk about away fans traveling. I mean, the both Glasgow teams are really famous for that, but especially Celtic. And when they came, I can't remember how many people they brought, but it just really impressed Villarreal that so many people came, and they were so, there was just a real friendship that grew up. Partly it was that there were so many people coming that they couldn't figure out, what are we going to do with all these visiting fans? And so they ended up making tons of paellas to have, you know, to keep people occupied and everything before the game. So anyway, that group has continued to the present day, and they got together with one of the Liverpool fan groups and organized some stuff that was before the match where the fans could mingle and everything. And as part of that, there was actually a banner that they had done for the 96 saying, "You'll never walk alone," in Villarreal colors. And that was, they had that. Yeah, people really got it, I think. There was a lot of appreciation of what was going on. And the atmosphere during the match was tremendous. I ended up walking back to my hotel in Liverpool with a bunch of Liverpool fans, and we chatting about all sorts of things. We had a great time. And I think for the fans who just came over and went back to the airport and flew back to Spain, it was still a meaningful experience. I think disappointment that we didn't get on to the final, but happiness that we had made it that far and experienced something really special.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I've had a soft spot for the Yellow Submarine already. I mean, it's hard not to, but some of these stories are pretty touching, and I think maybe I've got yet another Spanish second team under my belt as this conversation goes on.
Right.
But coming back, I guess, to the modern day. So you've been through these experiences, seeing the club live, following every week as a fan, as a devoted fan. Could you tell us a little bit about when that transformed into more of a sort of creative endeavor with Villarreal USA, and how different is it to watch games as a fan as opposed to watching them with more of a critical lens?
So I didn't start Villarreal USA. It already existed as a blog, like a WordPress blog, that a fellow in Baltimore had started, and I want to say about 2008. And I think the reason why was because we had signed Giuseppe Rossi, who, you know, is from New Jersey. We also had signed Jose Altidor. I think he was thinking, well, I mean, he was a Villarreal fan already and was hoping to sort of expand their following here. And there was a second person that he had recruited who was in the D.C. area, and the two of them were sort of running this blog. But they were both, I think one was just coming out of law school and one was just getting in. And there was this thing called SB Nation that we didn't know much about. But they said, well, maybe we should kind of see if they wanted to do something, because it was getting hard to just publish a regular little blog and be responsible for all the updates and everything. So, and I had come on that summer and said, I had found them and said, hey, you know, I like Villarreal, can I do some stuff for you? And so it all, in 2010, we became part of SB Nation. And that was perfect because at the time it looked like we were maybe going to be a competitive foil to Barcelona and Real Madrid. So they were happy to have us. We were happy to have them. And so over the years, it sort of has gone back and forth as far as official titles and things. But I've been involved with the blog for, you know, 12 years now almost. It's different when you're watching it as a fan versus being a little more. When you're a fan, you can let yourself go and scream more, I think.
Yeah.
When you're doing it as a especially if you're trying to do something like a live blog the match, or you're trying you're going to write a recap later. Yeah, you're trying to make some notes, but I try to just sort of sit back and absorb the overall feel of the thing and not try to get quite as wound up about it. It was hard. I mean, the year that we were relegated, I was, you know, I mean, it's crushing, you know. And then the year we came back was, well, next year will always be, I think, in many ways, one of my favorite years, because we made it back and there was the connection between the team and the club that year. I mean, between the team and the fans that year was really special, because they, Senior Rydge pretty much did everything he could to keep the budget strong enough to give us a chance to come back. We had some amazing stories of, you know, players that we got mid-year that worked out. So, you know, you always have the emotion, but when you're writing for the blog, you try to have to balance it out a bit, and you always have to remind people that, you know, this is not Football Manager. This is, you know, this is not a video game, and players are people, and sometimes they, you know, things don't work out quite the way you want or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's something I really want to touch on, is sort of the fan identity online. So as you said, with your Football Manager analogy there, in general, you know, football Twitter especially can be a pretty toxic place, and football conversation online in general can be a little bit hyperbolic and crazy a lot of the time. But I wondered, does the club's identity as that sort of quite wholesome small town club, does that transmit to the internet space? Do you find that because you must encounter a lot of fans doing what you do, do you find that they're quite respectful, and or do you get a lot of those crazy fans that perhaps, like, you know, Man United and Real Madrid and stuff get?
You get, you know, I would say you're always going to get some like that, but they're fewer, because I think most of the fans you encounter on the internet are for Villarreal, I think, are a lot of them are local, and so they sort of have an appreciation of the club, and the ones that tweet in English that are from, a lot are from the UK and elsewhere in Europe, and they've at least been to the ground a couple of times. They have a bit of an appreciation of what it's like. Sure, we get people who are upset about, you know, well, we should fire this guy, or we should bench this guy. That always happens. But I think it's a little more restrained, and we don't get, apart from some of the Valencia Villarreal stuff, we don't get a lot of people really being angry with each other. And even then, it's kind of more good natured. We hate to lose to Valencia. I mean, we just did. It's the local derby, but you don't get, it's not as toxic as something like some of the big matches in England are, I guess.
Yeah, Man United, Liverpool or something like that, for example. Maybe you get some good natured banter, some funny memes, but it's all a little bit more positive, I guess. Well, we're going to come on to some real positivity in a second, because I want to get on to matters on the pitch in the last couple of years. But before we do that, we're going to take one very quick break. And we're back. So, Alan, the first thing I wanted to touch on as far as this last few years and what's going on sort of right now on the pitch is, of course, the first major trophy that you alluded to earlier, being the Europa League victory from last season. Describe to me and to us your feelings watching Villarreal beat Manchester United and win the Europa League in what has to be one of the most dramatic penalty shootouts in history.
Yeah, I think it was, I can't really explain it. I mean, it was like, I think everybody was impressed with how we set up the team. I think we played really well. I also think we could have won in extra time if that penalty had been called that I think was. But anyway, it was an absorbing match to watch, because you sort of sensed that we were playing very well, but Manchester United being Man United, you just felt like, oh, yep, something's going to happen. They're going to pull
That's
it out
how I felt
somehow,
watching.
Right? Yeah, it's like you kind of felt like, ah, oh, something's going to happen, and it just never did. And then when we got to the penalties, I mean, at that point, I mean, penalties are a bit of a, it's a tough way to choose a winner anyhow. But the fact that I have never seen a penalty shootout in my life where almost all of the penalties were just really well taken. I mean, usually in 22 penalties, you would get somebody who would put one up into the stands, and that never happened. I mean, it was just astonishing. I was actually what I had was I had the radio on with or the Radio Villarreal feed on my computer, which was actually slightly ahead of the video that I had streamed that I had. And so I was listening to Javi Mata, you know, and when Rulli made the save, I mean, that's of course when I knew we'd won. And I think I was just in shock for a minute. I mean, I sort of collapsed on the floor, and then I went and got a bottle of champagne and, but it was just hard to believe. I mean, I think partly because we'd been close before, I think, yeah, it was just hard to imagine. And when I'm not ashamed to say it. I was crying and swigging champagne.
I'm not surprised. Talking about how difficult it can be to watch a game and remain calm if you're trying to cover it with a recap. I mean, that must have been the hardest one ever. Did you recap that one? Did you write a review of that one?
I can't remember. I think we all did. A bunch of us came on and recapped it. But it was like the whole memories of the thing were just, I mean, I don't know. It felt like, I think as a Villarreal fan, you've also, having been close for so long, it was, I don't know, it just felt like when we got to the final, getting to the final was a big deal because it was the first time we'd done that. And so I think all of us had said, okay, if we lose, we lose, but I just hope we play well and give a good account of ourselves, and we'll see what happens. And then the more the game went on, I think the more confident we felt that, wow, we really are standing toe to toe with these guys, and we can win this. We can win this. And so I think by the end, when the shootout happened, if we had lost that, I think we would have really felt aggrieved because we thought we were the better team on the day. And that was one, you know, thing that we were all commenting on was how well we were playing. I think the thing that really brought home to me the whole magnitude of it, though, was watching, I guess it was the next day or 2 days later, they had a parade through Villarreal with open top bus and everything, and the team sort of broadcast it live. And that was really special, having been there to see how they did that. It was just really cool. So that to me, it's like, that's always going to, the match and the parade afterwards are always going to be the thing that I remember.
And to what extent did having Unai Emery at the helm give you a little bit of belief going into it too? Because you'd already beaten Arsenal in the semi.
Yeah.
And you had the master at the helm, you know, you're the master of the Europa League. I mean, I know that before the kickoff myself, I was thinking, like you said, on paper, it's Man United and, you know, it's going to be tough. But I was thinking there's every possibility they can win this with Emery in charge.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that if you talk to fans and certainly online beforehand, that was sort of the general feeling is like, well, I mean, Man United were, you know, neither team domestically was doing that well or being that consistent. And so I think looking at it going in, we were like, yeah, but we've got Emery, you know, and he seems to, you know, he's got the knack for managing those sorts of ties. So I think we had confidence in him. We had confidence that Gerard was going to nab a goal because that would, you know, the form he was in. But I think we were kind of, it was going to be a very tight thing. And so I think it was a lot different than thinking back to the Europa League semis before. I think we, having been at the Liverpool match, we had a team that time that was talented. Liverpool just blew us away. That was kind of the first. That was sort of early Klopp. Liverpool blew us away. And 2010-11, I think we had the most talented team in the semis, and we played one bad half against Porto, and that was it. So, you know, I think as Villarreal fans, you sort of learn not to count your, not to assume you're going to win. I think we were kind of all hoping Emery would be the charm, or would do it over the edge. But I think what really was astonishing was how the penalty shootout was just, as I said, I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, and you didn't want to be complacent, but you thought it would be a tight game and there would be a chance, which I think everyone did from the outside too. But taking into account that win of that first major trophy, I know Emery hasn't been there very long, and not as long as some of the other coaches that have been there, like Pellegrini. But where does he sort of rank up in terms of the club's great coaches after achieving that?
Good question. I think, you know, I think if you, Pellegrini is always going to be, I think, regarded as the quintessential coach, and Marcelino. I mean, I think fans really, in fact, some would even put Marcelino ahead of Pellegrini, because Marcelino came when we were in the Segunda, took us up, I mean, just an incredible run of matches and just completely changed the way the team was playing. And then took a squad that really, when you look back at our lineup, I'm like, really? We played Joel Campbell that much? I mean, we didn't have the most talented squad, but he did a lot with it. I think Marcelino is kind of the classic coach that you can put up with for a couple of years, and then that's about it. But he was a tremendous coach for us. Emery, I think, will be regarded very highly, although I have to say that may depend on how this year goes and, you know, how long he stays.
Yeah, well, let's address the elephant in the room then in that case. Let's talk about these Newcastle United rumours. I'm not so sure that this is going to happen, but how close do you think this is to being a reality, that he could leave and go to Newcastle at this stage in the season, having accomplished what he already has and given his previous experience in England, which I would say probably wasn't a very nice one for him?
Yeah, I'm actually more skeptical about it than I think a lot of people at this point. I mean, so this morning, you know, the initial thing I read was, I guess, in Times Sport tweet that basically said, yeah, you know, he's going to be hired. And then it's sort of been walked back to, well, he's one of two top candidates and all this stuff. Here's the thing. I don't know that the money makes a ton of difference. I mean, I'm sure it does, but I don't know that he would walk or, you know, change jobs just to become better paid. I think the question is whether or not he would feel as though does he feel like he has something to prove going back to England, and does he feel the need to prove himself as a manager there? And is there something about the sporting project that appeals to him? It's true that in Arsenal he was, I think, derided fairly so, but didn't get the success that Arsenal fans expected. Newcastle, as you know, I mean, it's way up there. It's if you can do, if he did go to Newcastle and kept them up this year and was able to achieve success with them, I mean, he would be a team a legend in the Northeast forever, right? So I don't know. I can see him, if he wanted to go back to England, I could see that there would be some appeal to that, being away from London and being in an area where he could sort of do things a little more quietly, although with the Saudi involvement, it may not be as quiet as it would have been. I don't know. I'm just not sure. And then the other part of it is that we're not doing very well this year in the league anyway. And there's starting to be talk about, well, is he the guy that we, for us long-term? I mean, in some ways he was brought to Villarreal to win a trophy and we figured that might take a couple of years. Well, he did it in year one. What is left for him to do there? So I can see both sides of it. I guess I'm skeptical, though. I'm feeling more like a 40-60 that he goes.
Yeah, or, you know. I'm skeptical about it too. But I think you've mentioned some good points there, though, that I didn't really think of, that there is some upside for him to joining them. But I'm with you. I'm quite skeptical on it. But let's talk about what's going wrong right now for his current club, for Villarreal. So, as you mentioned, it's not been such a fantastic start in La Liga. I mean, in the Champions League, it's been okay, right? I think there's actually, if I remember correctly, something like, maybe is it 4 points out of the three games?
Yeah, I think that in the Champions League, it was okay, except for, I think, the Man United result, giving up the goal late on, was really that really hurt us. But yeah, in the Champions League, we have a match today against Young Boys. If we win that, we'll be joint top of the group if there's a winner in the other match. So, you know, the Champions League is not going so badly, I suppose. The league, though, I think what's concerning is that before the last international break, we were playing really well. Since then, we haven't looked good at all. And it's a lot of it, it just seems like our play is too slow. We're controlling possession, but we're not doing enough with it. And it's the build-up play is in La Liga. Teams are willing to let us possess the ball and counterattack, and we're having a hard time dealing with that.
It must be frustrating too, especially given this year, because it's so close up there. There's like, you know, nine teams that have about 4 points separating them. You know, there's all the sort of, in quotes, big boys are sort of struggling, and it's wide open. You know, that you'd think on paper this could, with Emery in charge as well, you know, he's, whether you like him or not, sort of an efficient coach who not only wins trophies but tends to sort of finish in fair positions. Looking back on the Arsenal thing now, for example, how derided he was when you actually look back now and think, well, was it actually, I think he was achieving what they had, that's the only right they had to achieve, really, was to get the Europa League every season. You look at it on paper and think, oh, you know, Emery could get them in the top four or maybe even do something miraculous in there this season. So it must be frustrating to see that opportunity sort of not working out.
Yes, it is. I think the frustrating, you know, as a fan, you always look back at matches and say, oh, God, you know, we lost. If we just had these points. And that was part of it. But I think lately it's just been, we haven't been playing well. And you know, we've got the talent to play a lot better than we have. It is frustrating. I think one thing that Emery maybe, and we talked about this when he was hired last year, was that La Liga, when he was managing Valencia, was a lot different. You had four or five teams that had more financial power than the rest, and the teams at the, I would say, in the bottom half were pretty awful.
That is true. This season is not like that.
Yeah, and what's happened over the years, and I think now that it's been several years of this more equitable, I don't want to say equitable, but more equitable distribution of TV money in La Liga, which is key there because the domestic gates aren't generally as you know, like they are in the UK. I think what's happened is you've got teams that even the teams that are that don't have a ton of money can have enough that they can go out and sign two or three good players to make them moderately competitive. And so the teams that are like in positions, say, 9 through 15 are now much more competitive than they used to be. And that's, I think, been a big change in La Liga. And this year with, I think, with Messi leaving and the Barcelona mess has sort of shown that, yeah, there's much more equity. It's much more even playing field than it used to be, at least for this year.
Yeah, it does appear to be the case. I think this season's kind of like a hyper intense version of that. But in general, as you said, that's been building for a while. But in terms of this season, then looking at what we have so far with the Champions League, with the sort of poor form in the league, what would be your expectations or hopes come the end of the season? Do you think you can do something serious in the Champions League? Is there hope for, I mean, Emery's the guy to do it, right? If you're going to do something crazy, I mean, he might actually take you there. But in the league as well, I mean, what would you settle for looking at where you are right now?
I think right now the next couple of matches in the Champions League are going to be key, because if we have two at home against Young Boys and Man United, and I think those two may well determine how we focus the rest of the year. If we can finish in the first two in our group, I think, you know, getting to the final eight, even to the final four, you know, that's where you put your faith in Emery to manage those things. If we do that, then I think the league is going to be less critical, as long as we, we do want to get back into Europe again one way or the other. So I think we've got to have an improved form in the league. But I think at the end of the year, it's like if we end up with finishing well in the Champions League and, you know, sneaking into the Europa League again, I think that would be okay. It wouldn't be great, but it would be okay. If we don't do well in the Champions League, you know, if we get knocked over to the Europa League, we'll try to win it again. if we finish fourth in the group, then I think the focus has got to be on getting back in Europe through the league placing. So, you know, I think it's tough, because we have a good enough team that we ought to be able to manage both of those things. So far, we haven't. And the trick for Emery is going to be to right our league position, I think.
Yeah, definitely, because he's always a very solid tactician in a one-off game or a two-legged affair. You know, I think that's why I had faith in that Man United final too, that I always thought that he was much better coach than Solskjaer. And I think even if you come up against better teams in the last 16 or even the last eight, there's a chance that he can sort of out-tactic the other coach. But in the league form, like you said, it's a little bit, I don't know, you need that consistency and you need to increase that form, unless you're going to go all the way and win one of the two of them again. I guess
There's always hope. I think the thing that's been distressing about the last few matches, though, is that for all of his tactical skills, he seems to me that he's always better when he has time to really think about it and develop a master plan to go up against the Man Uniteds or whatever. He's gotten wrong-footed a couple of times recently in the league with his tactics, and I think that's I think in the league he tends to be focusing more on, I want my, you know, here is how I want the team to play, and it hasn't been working so well. So for him, the question is, okay, do I change that approach and go to a more direct counterattacking style where I can use the strength of my speed in the wingers rather than my side-to-side build-up in midfield, which I think has been frustrating.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. We're not going to know for a little while yet how things are going to work out. But of course, best of luck for the season. I hope that I hope you will be getting stronger in the league soon. But before we go, we're going to come back and finish off with a little bit of trivia, like we usually do every time. But before we do that, we're going to take one very quick break. And we're back. So, Alan, we're going to finish off now with our little quiz that we like to call Do You Know Your Heroes? And we're going to find out in a second to what extent you do know these heroes. or in my case, to what extent you've been spending time on Wikipedia or Transfermarkt.
Yeah, I'm worried already. Go ahead.
If you did that a lot during the last 10 years, then you should have no problem at all. Okay, first question. So while the Europa League is described as Villarreal's first major trophy, they did in fact win the UEFA Intertoto Cup twice before. When was the last year that they won that trophy?
Let me think. 2005.
Close, 2004.
Ah, okay.
Very close. They also won it in 2003, so back-to-back wins, actually. Very right. Impressive. Maybe this year could be the back-to-back Europa League wins.
Europa League, okay.
We shall see. Question two. So the club have never won La Liga, but they have come runners-up before. What year did they achieve that runners-up position?
I should know. I've got the T-shirt. let's see. Was that 2007, 2008? I may be off by a year again.
Correct. Very good. 2007, 2008. Very nice. Question three. Which player holds the record for the most Villarreal appearances in history? And that's in the first team only, not in the B team. So only first team appearances. Which player has the most?
Bruno Soriano?
Correct. I don't suppose you know how many? You have the point anyway, but just...
No, I don't know how many. A lot.
It is a lot. 423 appearances he made between 2006 and 2020. And actually, Mario Gaspar is right behind him on 411. So you could have a new leader soon. Question four. Which player has scored the most goals in the club's history?
Oh, let me think a minute here. Okay. I was going to say Rossi was... Is it Rossi? I'm going to say... I know he's up there, but I don't remember.
He was up there, but it surprised me to know that it's actually Gerard Moreno.
What's wrong? Gerard passed him now. Yeah, that's right.
Despite still playing there. I thought it would be some guy from history, but it's actually... Well,
Gerard, that's right, because Gerard had so many goals last year, and he scored also... He's had two spells with us. Okay, yeah. I should have gotten that right, because I should have remembered he passed... Giuseppe.
He played between 2012 and 2015 and then from 2018 until now, and he scored 85 goals during that time, which is pretty incredible in such a short amount of time. But yes, it is Gerard Moreno. Question number five. Who has been the club's longest serving coach since the turn of the century?
Let me think about this one, because we've tended to run through them.
Yeah, you did. This was an easy one to spot because there were only two who weren't like 1 year or, yeah. Or something. That was 6 months. A lot of that.
I'm trying to remember if Marcelino came in mid 2012. Okay, it's either Marcelino or Pellegrini, and I don't remember which one is in which order. So I'm going to guess Pellegrini, but I may be wrong.
Correct. He was there between July 2004 and June 2009, so almost 5 years. Marcelino was about four, I think, maybe, or three and a half or something. But yeah, there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of 1 year, 6 months, 1.5 years. They're very trigger happy there at Villarreal.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, most trigger happy, plus also we've gotten, you know, well, I guess Pellegrini and was lured away. But yeah, we've had a whole Calleja thing coming and going, and it's been interesting.
It has indeed. Well, we are 3 for 5 now. This next question, number 6, is a really tough one for a couple of reasons. One, because it's something that people just don't really keep track of, and you know, in their minds all the time. And secondly, because it's probably the data wasn't around for this in the deep past. So we're talking contemporary figure here, not, you know, in the 70s and stuff. And the question is, who holds the record for the most assists for the club? So it could be that there was a guy in the 60s who had loads, but they just didn't record it. This person was active sort of in the 2000s. So, well, actually, sort of within your time, the last 20 years.
Yeah, okay. He was active. Boy, that's a tough one. I don't know, Santa Cazorla, maybe?
Correct. It was Santa Cazorla. He provided 57 assists, very good, between 2003, 2006, 2007, 2011, and 2018 to 2020. So three spells at the club, bunch of assists. And like I said, there could be a sort of dispute there. I'm sure there are some, you know, some old heads at the stadium who could tell you about some guys from the 80s who probably had more, but this is sort of the number that we have out there right now anyway. Yeah. So that gives us 4 out of 6. Question number 7. For which player did the club spend its highest ever transfer fee?
Okay, I'm going to say, oh boy, we've been spending, is it still Alcácer or has he been supplanted by, this might depend on how you do it. I'm going to say Alcácer, but I think that may not be right now.
Apparently, well, it was Paco Alcácer, but now he has been taken over by Danjuma.
Danjuma, okay. Because the question I had was, there was some dispute. I've seen different numbers for Danjuma's fee, so that's why I'm going to give myself half a point there.
I agree. With the transfer fee one, unless it's really kind of out, really clear. I think I had this before when I did it with the Liverpool guy, and we were talking about, I think it was Alisson and... there was another player, maybe, I can't remember, Van Dijk or someone, or maybe it was when they sold Coutinho and someone else. Sometimes they're really close, and then the fee is, like, disputed and different currencies and stuff. So according to Transfermarkt, my favorite website, it is Arnaut Danjuma Grunewald for £21 million earlier this year. But it could be Alcácer, or there could be a sort of complication there. So we'll definitely give you half a point on that one. To finish off, this is one that we do with every guest. Apart from Europe, which continent has the most representatives in the current Villarreal first team squad?
Ooh. Apart from Europe.
The vast majority are Spanish, of course, and by proxy European.
Well, I guess it sort of depends on how you classify. Are you talking in terms of, if you're talking in terms of international players, I would say Africa, because I would go with that.
Correct. Yes. There may be some dispute in terms of maybe some of these players were born in France or whatever, but in terms of, who they represent at international level, you have Samuel Chukwueze from Nigeria, Boulaye Dia from Senegal, Aissa Mandi from Algeria. And now, I didn't actually know this until I did this research. I didn't know that Serge Aurier was at Villarreal now. Has he started any games?
Yeah. He started last week, I think. He's played a couple of matches for us. He's ineligible in the Champions League, though, unless we get to the knockout rounds, because he joined as a free agent recently.
Does he look okay? Does he look like he could get back to his best? Because that could be a shrewd signing.
He's looked pretty good. He's looked pretty good from what little I've seen of him. So I think people are optimistic.
Okay. Well, very respectable score there. I think that puts us on 5.5, which is very respectable indeed, Alan. Thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, would you like to tell our listeners where they could read your stuff or listen to any stuff that you're doing, anything at all that you want to plug?
Sure. They can. What I would say is, if you go to VillarrealUSA.com, that's the website for Villarreal USA, and make sure that you spell Villarreal with two L's and two R's. People often skip the second R, so. So go there, and we also do podcasts that are available on there, and they're on. You can sign up for them through that website. And also follow us on Twitter. And we have a Facebook presence, though not a huge one. I think Twitter is the more fun one to follow, especially for matches.
Yeah, with football in general, I think Twitter is the place to be over Facebook.
Yeah, and that's good. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, personally, most of what I do is it's sort of a variety of things, but I'll often retweet some Villarreal stuff on there. I'm at Groguet, Groguet01. Groguet is the Valencian for little yellow, and it refers to
it's the mascot, right?
Yeah, it's the mascot too. Yeah, the mascot with the submarine head. Yeah,
yeah.
The youth program is Club Groguet, and it's kind of a popular term to refer to Villarreal fans generally, actually.
Okay, Alan. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Really, really appreciate it. Best of luck for the season. Best of luck in the Champions League, and hopefully Emery will stay.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully he'll stay, and we'll get some good results, and we'll see if you know. But one thing about being a Villarreal fan is you never get too complacent about anything. You always just sort of see what happens.
And never get too attached to managers.
Yeah, never get too attached to managers. That's right.
Okay, Alan, thank you so much. See you later, buddy.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks so much for listening to the Sportacast Football Stories podcast. Please like, share, and leave 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. This is crucial to a show of our size. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please tell a friend online or offline. That really helps a small podcast like ours to grow organically. Head to www.sportacast.com for live streams, data, statistics, and much more from the world of football. You can also follow us on Twitter at sportacast.com. You can follow myself at Craig Sportacast. And we'd also love to read out the thoughts and questions of our listeners. So please feel free to tweet those to me anytime or send us an email to show@sportacast.com with your opinions or your questions. And we'll get to those on the next episode. Thanks again to Alan for coming on to speak to us today. Thanks so much to you for listening. And see you on the next episode of the Sportacast Football Stories podcast.